Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
So here we are, late summer 2021, and over the last year, the Portland area and most of the Pacific Northwest has seen a 100-year wildfire season,
helicopters are dropping water on the
a generational ice storm,
90,000 customers are still
and a heat wave that shattered records.
53 deaths can likely be attributed to that.
For me, and a lot of you, those events hit home. Every few months, stark reminders that something is changing about our weather.
You or someone you know lost power, at least once.
An entire region got buried in a blanket of bad air that was dangerous to breathe.
A lot of people died.
Hundreds of people died.
116 Oregonians have now died as a result of the state's recent...
The climate is changing. Whether the shift in our weather can officially be blamed on human-caused global warming or natural environmental variability remain points of contention and heated debate. A debate that won't be held on this platform. At least, not in this project. Climate change is not up for debate. It is a fact.
This record-breaking temperature
and limbs just toppled
to the ground. It continues
to
threaten thousands of buildings.
At least four lives.
For all intents and purposes, this town is gone.
And while we may not be able to blame climate change alone for causing more extreme weather, the evidence is clear. It is not helping. And it is getting worse.
Oregon City extending its state of emergency declaration until mid-March.
When you factor in a strong wind and then ongoing dry conditions, it really makes
That's a real change from 20 years ago.
I think Mother Nature is very mad at humans.
So, we're going to go on a journey. A journey to examine the weather events of the recent past.
You know, these small decisions that we all make in our day-to-day lives, they do really have consequences. They have impacts. They add up.
The groundbreaking research of the present.
You can pretty much rule out a lot of things that are not caused by humans.
And a journey to try and understand how everything is going to change in the near and distant future.
It gives me hope that policymakers continue to try to turn this around.
Along the way, we hope to provide you with a look at how we got here and the historical context of what is actually going on.
There's more energy in the atmosphere, we know that, and that is going to cause more extreme weather.
We'll take a look at what is happening and what will inevitably continue.
The crises we're going to be facing from climate change are really going to balloon and intersect with other crises.
And there's some scary stuff there.
Like end of days kind of scary stuff.
What climate change is contributing to is basically an increased frequency, duration, and severity of these extreme events.
But there's also opportunity with adaptation. And the potential, through mitigation and the decisions we make now, to forever alter the path of human evolution.
Humans are really good at turning even tragedy into a profit-making opportunity.
I'm Ian Costello. Join us as the Coin Podcast Network goes beyond the headlines to take a first-of-its-kind look at a climate in crisis.
We can't buy our way out of this. We really need to build community to work together in a crisis to both reduce our emissions and also to adapt and to help each other.
It's kind of a crazy system, right? Where the onus of figuring out how to dispose of things is falling on the consumer.
You ask any young Oregonian if climate change is a serious problem, and they all just almost look at you in disbelief and they say, absolutely.
My name is Kelly Bairn, and I'm the morning meteorologist at Coin6 News.
Well, Kelly, here we are, nearing the end of our Coin Podcast Network series, Climate in Crisis, and we've come a long way in just a few short weeks.
Ian, you and I started talking about this a year ago, as those fires that blew up over Labor Day 2020 were still burning out of control.
And that was kind of the starting point for this whole thing. Those fires played a huge role in the questions we asked that became the first chapter of this series.
Yeah, that's when we took a deep dive into the Labor Day fires from the end of last summer, the ice storm from this past February, and the summer's heat dome. We wanted to find out what role climate change, and specifically increasing global temperatures, may have played in those weather events.
And what we found, thanks to our experts, helped clarify, for me at least, the obvious danger we are facing here. But there were some surprises along the way, too.
We learned that climate change isn't causing extreme weather events, but it's making them more extreme and more deadly. And when it came to the three events we looked at, it is clear that if climate change continues unchecked, things like firestorms we saw at the end of last summer and the heat dome we saw this June will likely happen more often. But the jury's still out on what role climate change may have played in February's ice storm, if any.
When it came to our second episode, we really drilled down on the economic impact of climate change. We used the examples of the timber and agriculture industries that are very important here in the Pacific Northwest. And our experts helped us understand that because of how interwoven everything is, continued climate change is going to affect us all in a huge way, because it has the potential to cost the global economy trillions of dollars in the coming decades.
And then in the third episode, we went into the urban landscape of the present to see how a lot of us are contributing to climate change and how the cities of the future will need to change how they are built and how we are living to adapt to climate change and hopefully mitigate the damage.
So we started by accepting that climate change is no longer up for debate. It is real. We explored extreme weather and economic impact and urban evolution through the prism of continued global temperature rise. We've spent three episodes telling you about the problems. So what are we going to do about it? And whose responsibility is it to make sure it happens?
That's what we're going to talk about now.
I'm Krista McDermott. I am a senior research associate at Portland State University. I run a program there called Community Environmental Services, and it focuses on reducing waste.
My name is Tara Kinnear. I am the board vice president of Recycling Advocates, which is a nonprofit organization based here in Oregon.
Tara and Krista are two of the people you're going to hear a lot from in this fourth episode.
The other new voice you're going to hear in this episode should be familiar to most Oregonians, U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, a vocal advocate for combating climate change. At the beginning of our interview with him, we asked him for an example of just how bad our climate crisis is getting.
I never imagined having to spend a decent chunk of the last few weeks working to try to get air conditioning and air filters and help for vulnerable people, senior citizens who, as you know, when it was 116 degrees, a number of them just said it was difficult to breathe. You take these fires, these are not your grandfather's fires. They're bigger, they're hotter, they're more powerful.
And that is a sentiment echoed by so many of the people we have talked to along the way.
It's, I think, one of the foremost threat to us as a species and also our habitat. There's so many various social problems that we face as well. And I don't want to diminish those, but the crises we're going to be facing from climate change are really going to balloon and intersect with other crises.
2 days before our conversation with Senator Wyden, the United Nations released a report saying we have reached a tipping point and we are running out of time to change our behavior and reverse the effects of continued climate change.
That was a real wake-up call, that recent report. It certainly showed anybody who had questions how serious this is.
There isn't any doubt anymore, Ian. Climate change is a serious problem, a problem that is getting more deadly and needs to be getting more attention.
And according to Krista McDermott, it's going to take an effort from all of us to make the changes we need to make.
Social psychology helps us understand the kinds of traits that people bring to a situation like climate change and how we will react to it, and also how we might change our culture, attitudes, beliefs in order to behave differently. I'd say that's been a growing part of interest in psychology and how we can be more resilient and adapt to the stresses we're facing with climate change. The part I deal with social psychology is a little more oriented towards how we work as groups with our different social identities, how climate change can affect us differently based on our social identities, how we work with each other in communities in order to address things like climate change.
So if we agree that it is going to be a group effort to deal with climate change, how do we get there? Is it a situation where rules and laws and government structure push us down this path? Or is it much more grassroots? Does it have to start at home?
we all, as individuals, we absolutely all have a role to play. And I think, you know, this is a really difficult question. I don't really know how we, I don't know how we get to this place. As an individual, I think we need to think about the impacts that these small decisions that I make every day in my own life, what are the ways that those have ripple effects?
That was Amanda Howell from Urbanism Next at the University of Oregon. She makes her feelings about your responsibility and my responsibility as individuals pretty clear. And Tara Kinnearum agrees.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is up to the individual. There's so much that we can do around that. Sharing resources with neighbors. Do you really need that lawnmower? How often do you use it? Do you need those hedge clippers sitting in your garage, or can you borrow them? You know, like all these things that we bring into our lives that we maybe don't need, that only create more production, create more waste with packaging and whatnot. It is to some extent going to be individually driven. It'll be interesting.
Back to the point Krista was making a few minutes ago. Sure, this needs to start with one person making the right decisions, but there must be that support from your social circles. We need to believe we are in this together.
Generally, we do tend to be oriented towards working together. It's how we have survived as long as we have. But it's hard to do in a situation where we don't see ourselves having a lot of influence in a situation. So one big problem from a psychology perspective with climate change is something called perceived behavioral control, which is a fancy way of saying how much you feel like you can control something. And global climate changing emissions clearly is not something one person can have a big effect on. It's hard with a large worldwide problem to feel like you can have anything that you can do about it. And really, the more we can connect with others, we'll have more influence and also be able to connect to a greater sense of agency.
So where do we start? If you or I or anybody listening to this wants to start having an impact as immediately as possible, what's the first step?
Do something. I know that may sound oversimplified, but doing anything is better than doing nothing. And as Krista points out, it can be as simple as how you eat your leftovers.
There is a lot you can do on your own or with your everyday practices. So for concrete examples, like if you are trying to do something like reduce waste at home, you know, from our studies, we find that most of the food waste is produce, which is not unsurprising. It's the hardest to keep fresh. So if you have a bin that you mark in your refrigerator that says, eat me first for the things that are turning over the fastest, or just learning a little bit about how to keep different types of produce fresher longer.
And she went on to explain how you can take that attitude from your home to your work and to keep the ball rolling. Create that sense of community she's been talking about.
Places where you do have the power to make change, to make those changes, and to work with others to make that change. If you work at a business, especially if you're someone with any kind of position of power at a business, to be able to prioritize reducing emissions in your supply chain is huge. Or if you own a restaurant, can you look around and look at ways to track your waste to reduce it?
Kelly, we can talk about food waste at home, and we can talk about getting your workplace involved in the decisions that can help make a difference when it comes to climate change. But when we talk about the specifics of what individuals can do, there's one word that pops up more than any other: recycling.
Yeah, Ian, that word carries a lot of promise and prejudice because it can work and it can help when it is done correctly.
It works to a degree, and so I want people to continue doing it. A lot of times the message around recycling is a bit of doomsdayism of why bother? It's just being landfilled, and it's not. In Oregon, your recycling is recycled. And if it's not, then there has to be a permit from the DEQ. It's public knowledge. Having transparency around those kinds of things really helps a lot. But is our recycling system perfect? Far, far from it.
Krista's opinion certainly came up a lot in our research and interviews for the series. Sure, recycling is certainly something an individual can do, but it has a lot of detractors, mainly in the form of those people who say it just isn't worth it.
That's why it was so important for us to talk to someone on the inside of the recycling industry, like Tara Knierim.
You know, I am passionate about recycling. I'm passionate about the environment, I guess is what I would say. Recycling is part of the solution, I do believe. It's not the whole solution, though. I think the recycling system on many levels works. It is somewhat broken. It's definitely not entirely broken, but it is somewhat broken. It makes complete sense to recycle glass and aluminum, steel, tin, paper, cardboard. Those all make complete sense. They're cost effective. They're good for the environment. They use less water, electricity, and other resources.
I like to think my family does a decent job of recycling. We sort our stuff into the right bins, and then we haul our bins to the curb.
We do too, Ian, but that isn't what everybody does.
I think the main thing is that when you go to recycle, you need to do it right. Know what's accepted in your curbside recycling and what you can take to other places. As frustrating as it might be not to put everything in the curbside recycling, you really need to not put stuff that cannot be recycled into the recycling bins.
Let's stop right here for a second and focus on that point. Even though a lot of us are doing what we think is right by trying to recycle, a phenomenon referred to as wish cycling is a huge problem.
Wish cycling is when you put something in the bin with the hope of it being recycled. Anything from a garden hose to the caps that are on your milk bottle. Anything that's going to get in there and gum up the system. That's not appropriate. That just gums up the system, makes everything more expensive, makes everything harder to do. So it's important to recycle as responsibly as possible.
The other thing that we need to talk about here is the fact that a lot of stuff we'd hoped to be able to recycle, we can't, especially when it comes to plastic.
Plastic is much harder. There's different types of plastic with different properties and different abilities to be recycled. And in order to recycle them, they have to be separated into their numbers, and they can only be recycled once, not infinitely, like a lot of the other products that I mentioned. Not everybody recycles everything that could be recyclable. It would be great if we could get participation around the things that are readily recyclable.
And when it comes to things being readily recyclable, that is a choice that is very tough for the consumer to take full control of. You can't decide what kind of plastic bottle for your Diet Coke. And it is tough for individuals to choose what kind of container laundry detergent is sold in.
Exactly. And that's why both Krista and Tara say the onus must lie on the manufacturer.
I hate putting the burden on individuals and the consumer. There is so much emphasis on people like sorting their recycling properly, when really businesses need to be producing fewer materials that aren't easily recyclable. I don't want people at home, you know, driving themselves crazy sorting clamshells, when really we need to have whole systems of reuse.
It's kind of a crazy system, right? Where the onus of figuring out how to dispose of things is falling on the consumer instead of the producers having accountability with the products they sell and what happens to them afterwards. And I think that consumer pressure can only do so much. They need to know how their products are getting used, how their packaging is being disposed of. They really need to be involved. And if there's no incentive for them to be involved, either financially or otherwise, then they just go for the cheapest thing. And it really shouldn't be the cheapest thing, right? Because it's not the cheapest thing for society.
During episode 3 of our series, University of Oregon professor Nico Larco gave us a great breakdown of how wanting to have something simple, like a backyard, can lead to a series of decisions and a domino effect that increase carbon emissions, which, as we explained in episode 1, is the main driver of global temperature increase.
He really broke that down in a concise and understandable way, and if you haven't listened to it yet, you should. But as we look to wrap up this part of the discussion, we wanted to bring Nico back to explain his thoughts on our own personal responsibility in dealing with climate change.
We'll limit it down to 3 things. One of them is get informed. Know what these issues are. Understand the connections between your individual actions and these larger effects. what kind of a place I live in, where I live within the city, how often I choose to use my car versus, you know, use a bike or use transit, the impact of my buying a bottle of water as opposed to just filling up a glass of water, right? So small scale things, understanding the connections my personal choices has to these larger impacts. The second thing is then making actual choices that reflect those things. And sometimes I'm going to say it might not be the most convenient of choices, and yet it is a good choice to have. I equate this a little bit to like, do I like chocolate cake? I love chocolate cake, right? So if you ask me, do you want any chocolate? I'd be like, yeah, great. Do I eat it all the time? No, because I understand what the effects of that are, and that would not be good for me. Well, same kind of thing with some of our decisions. Would it be easier for me to hop in my car to do that? Yeah. Might I be able to get a larger home further out? Yeah. Is that a good thing overall? No, probably not. And therefore, I need to make a decision that on the one hand, choose best possible thing, but weigh a little bit of the future issues as well. So be educated, understand connections, take actions on those connections. And then the last one, which I think is really important, is be active. Be active in the conversation in your community, politically, what's happening in your city, in your state, federal government. Put your voice in that. Make sure that your view of this is heard. It makes a huge difference for elected officials to hear people's voices about a topic.
When we come back, we shift our focus from individual action to government policy as we continue to look at how we can better address and adapt to climate change.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW. It's our award-winning newscast, 1 hour earlier at 10 o'clock. A full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family from the news team that's watching out for you. Plus, Portland's most accurate forecast certified by WeatherRate from Chief Meteorologist Natasha Stenbach. See why more people are switching to Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW. Watching out for you.
The Coin6 weather team has the most accurate forecast in town, certified by WeatherRate. Coin6 Weather, watching out for you.
So, Ian, we talked a lot before the break about personal responsibility when it comes to combating climate change. But you and I and your family and my friends can only do so much.
Kelly, the more people we talked to for this project and the more we asked about how we go about instituting real change that can make a real difference, one clear reoccurring theme was evident.
Government has a role to play in this for sure. I don't think it's necessarily on government entirely.
I feel like this quickly goes into people saying it's the nanny state and they're going to tell us to not do certain things. I think, though, it's the government's role in terms of protecting our environment. What are some of the default structures we can put into place? Because right now, the default structures aren't working to protect our environment or us.
It's the government's responsibility to create the enabling environment. When it comes down to it, to really get towards the finish line, we need policy. We can't individually EV our way out of this. We need to coordinate. And the number one institution for helping us coordinate, giving us a structure to work within, to kind of getting us all on the same page, are different levels of government.
Along with Amanda Howell from Urbanism Next and Krista McDermott from Portland State University talking about government responsibility, you just heard economics professor Randy Bluffstone take it a step further by bringing up the idea of policy, creating the environment we need to help protect the environment.
And that has to come from government. And that's why we reached out to U.S. Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon to better understand the role he sees the feds playing in all of this.
Not only do I believe that the federal government has a role to play, but as chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, I'm pushing to enact that role, those new policies, into law. For example, the federal tax code has 44 separate provisions on energy. A big chunk of them are relics from yesteryear, programs that advance fossil fuels, which contributes to the climate change problem. I was able to get the Senate Finance Committee to take those 44 tax breaks and put them in the dustbin of history And instead of those 44, we'd have one for clean energy, one for clean transportation fuel, and one for energy efficiency.
And for Senator Wyden, it's not just about protecting the environment. When terrible storms freeze supply chains, or huge hurricanes cripple entire coastal communities, or extreme heat knocks out our power grid, there is another danger to consider. Do you see climate change as a threat to national security, and does it need to be addressed as such?
Well, actually, I'm on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. I can't get into classified materials, but even a few years ago, national security officials were making it clear they thought that climate change had national security implications.
So if government needs to be involved in creating the environment to help us combat climate change, they can't do it with an iron fist. They can't just make some rules and expect people to follow them.
You know, Ian, we're seeing that play out in a different way right now. With the fight over COVID vaccines, people in all walks of life don't like the government telling them how to behave. That's why, across the board, the experts we talk to express their belief that it has to be a combined effort. Government creates systems that encourage and incentivize people to make decisions that are better for the planet.
I think that this is where it is about finding ways of having the public and private sectors work collaboratively together. In my mind, let's let both do what they do best. And I think a way to see this work is, so for cities to set goals and to say, this is where we want to get to. These are the outcomes we want to see. You, private sector, and you, technology companies that are at the forefront of innovation, what are your ideas? What do you suggest? How would you innovate to help us get to the outcomes that we want to see? More about the focus on the outcomes and less necessarily on saying, this is the exact path we want you to take, private sector. We're saying, this is where we want to get to, and we're going to hold you to that. But we want to work collaboratively. We want you to bring your creativity to the table and help us get there. Everybody needs to put their shoulder into this if we are going to affect positive change.
Consumer pressure only goes so far. There's always going to be the producers that don't do the right thing because they can do it cheaper some other way, because the government isn't involved and making them internalize some of the externalities that they are producing. Because basically what's happening is they can wash their hands of their products, of their packaging, of everything that they've created, and let the consumer deal with it. And really what should be happening is they need to figure this out.
This is, I think, an important role that cities have from the public sector side and state and the national governments to make sure that we are setting the standards and parameters in the way that's like helping achieve our community goals. And I see this not just so much like, you know, government imposing a will, but if you think of a business and you say, well, you could be keep doing this action, but it is going to cost you a whole lot later on. I mean, like tremendously, like you can do this, it's going to save you a little money right now, but it's going to cost you a whole lot later on. You'd say, well, any business that thinks it's going to be around for a while, that's not a really good idea, right? Making decisions that continue to create problems for climate change are real problems, right? For quality of life, for equity, fiscally, right? Are enormous problems. And so government can and should be making long-term decisions, long-term plays to make sure that we end up in a place that's, you know, wonderful for everyone. And again, it's not that the city needs to decide or government needs to decide what's good for us. We all decide these are the ways that we want to live. 30 years from now, we'd like the city to be X. Well, then we need to make those decisions now to make sure that we're able to have that.
For his part and from his platform, Senator Wyden continues to push for government policy aimed at climate change with incentives, including tax breaks.
What excites me the most is that there are really two policies that can change behavior. One is carbon pricing, which I'm also very interested in and working on. And the other is taxes. And to be able to say for the first time, instead of just ladling out tax breaks for powerful, you know, interests, we'd have an altogether different orientation, a new lodestar built around the proposition that Democrats and Republicans and conservatives and liberals all know we ought to be trying to reduce carbon emissions. And now, for the first time under my bill, passed by the Senate Finance Committee, is that would be the new focus of energy policy. It's long overdue. And then we would establish for the first time in federal policy, that to be eligible for the credits, which are really tax cuts, you've got to reduce carbon emissions. And from the standpoint of the Senate Finance Committee, it is the most transformative policy that the Finance Committee has produced for purposes of helping the environment in well over 100 years.
And Senator Wyden, like a lot of the experts we talked to for this series, sees opportunity for economic growth in dealing with climate change when governments set policy.
No question about it. And this fall, the Senate Finance Committee's proposals to promote more clean energy manufacturing is going to highlight the fact that, yes, this will be good for more high-skill, high-wage jobs. It'll be good for the environment. And there's no question that a greener, more efficient manufacturing base will be a huge plus for the country. And I'm very supportive of it.
When we come back, we'll take a look at what gives our experts hope and where we go from here.
Hello, Coin6 News anchor Emily Burris here. We know your mornings are busy, and we want to help you be in the know as you head out the door. That's why the Coin Podcast Network is bringing you a brand new podcast called The Daily Six. Every weekday, we'll bring you the day's six biggest headlines in a quick and concise report, on demand and on your schedule. So check out the Coin Podcast Network on coin.com or have The Daily Six sent directly to you each day by subscribing to the Coin Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW, a full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family. See why more people are switching to Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW.
Toward the end of each of the episodes in this series, we've asked our experts if they think we can figure out a way to make better choices to not only adapt to climate change, but help mitigate it.
And like a lot of the discussions we've had over the last several months, we heard concern, legitimate concern, but there is hope for the future too.
I'm a mother of a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I have to say it's hit me a lot harder what I think the world is looking like that they'll be entering into. And it can be hard to have hope. I think it really depends on what we do in the next few years. We can always continue to adapt to the best of our abilities. Personally, we recently moved into a co-housing community. It gives me a lot of hope living here where we're able to work together as a group. We share a lot of different resources. A lot of the footprints of the houses are smaller, so there's less energy used. I have hope that I see a lot of people who work on things like new and different housing, changing our zoning laws to allow for denser housing, but also hopefully building communities around that, not just adding more houses. And I see a lot of momentum around that in Oregon.
I do think that we can fix the recycling system. I think there's lots of innovation going on right now, and there's lots of people trying to figure it out. I do think we'll be able to figure it out.
Never bet against Oregon. Never bet against our people. Just look what's happening right now. All these talented young people want to move to Oregon. They want to move here because they know there's a bright future. There is no reason to bet against Oregon. We are resilient. We have this incredible capability, almost like a trampoline, to jump into new areas. And the fact that we're leading on climate change, we want to make a big difference. We want to have cleaner energy. And yes, I think we've got a lot of reasons to say Oregon's leadership on climate change is going to be good for our state and good for the country.
So that's it, Kelly. 16 experts, 24 hours of interviews, and 4 podcasts looking at our climate and crisis. And what did we learn?
Well, Ian, climate change is real. Humans and our carbon emissions are driving global temperatures higher. That is making extreme weather more extreme and more deadly.
Yeah, and it's going to hurt our economy, and it's going to force us to change our ways to survive. And for me, looking back on what we've done and this journey we've been on, it is the opportunity that lies within this fight, the opportunity to evolve and grow and frankly thrive if we do this right. That's what gives me hope. How about you? What did you hear over the last months that give you hope, Kelly?
For me, I think it is the move into our governments putting up a fight as well and kind of working to change policy, but also just spreading the word on this, getting it out there, getting the research out there to common folks who don't know much about this science or have heard misinformation. It is giving me hope that we can make a change in the future. This is not the end.
It's not. Kelly and I are going to take a few weeks off, hopefully enjoy some spectacular fall weather and some time outside before the real rain sets in. And when we return, like I said, in a few weeks, maybe a month, we will shift our focus from the what of climate change to the what now, a podcast series dedicated to telling the stories of how we are going to work together to solve these real problems and deal with our climate in crisis. Look for that soon on the COIN Podcast Network. Kelly, thank you. It's been fun.
Thanks, Ian.
COIN Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.